evening, everyone. Welcome to the April 13th meeting of the Joint Committee on Implementing Measure 91. We really appreciate your coming here to give us input in our draft documents that we're moving forward with. We're going to have three amendments, three concepts that we ask your input on tonight. One is going to be around standards for lab testing and accreditation. One is going to be around standards for labeling and packaging. And a third is going to be around land use concepts that we've been working through. So to get started, I'm actually going to pass the gavel to my great colleague, co-chair Burdick, and walk down and thank some people for some good work. So I'll be right there.
Share our position in the diocese.
Welcome to the committee. We have some familiar faces. Don't forget to give your name for the record.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Co-Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger, State Representative from House District 38. And it's been my pleasure in the last month or so to work with a team of people, with particular thanks to Mark Mayer, our legislative counsel, but trying to tackle a couple of issues that are relevant both to the Measure 91 and to the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act work. One of them is, both of which Mark will describe in greater detail, but the first, the Dash 2 amendment to 844, deals with lab testing and lab accreditation so that we can try to make sure that the product that people are using, ingesting, incorporating into other products is safe, free of harmful pesticides or mold or other bacteria, and that they understand, that they have a clear indication of the strength of that product. And the second Senate bill, or the Dash 3 amendment, would apply again both to medical and adult use recreational marijuana, and the concept is to have some standards for labeling and packaging to protect kids from access, to make sure that information is on the package about what people are about to consume, and again to try to keep people safe. So we welcome your questions and input, and to the folks who have come here today to provide testimony. You know, we're putting these out in draft form because your input and feedback is really a crucial part of the process. So don't hold back. And we look forward to hearing from you. I want to thank some people who worked hard on this effort. Senator Cruz has been part of the lab standard work group. Senator Prezanski, Senator Burdick, Senator Buckley, and others have all given great feedback. And then here is a list of individuals who gave us their input and feedback so far, and the list will definitely increase. But here are work group participants. Ms. Rosa Klein, Stephanie Rings Sage, Shannon Swatek, Steve Wagner, Mowgli Holmes, Jeremy Sackett, Roshan Reardon gave some good feedback, Jeremy Kletke, Tom Burns, Jeff Sugarman, Don Morse, Amy Margolis, Chris Carpenter. All those people have given us good feedback. If we did anything wrong, it's not on them, it's on me, but they did do, they gave us some good input. So thanks.
Just one correction, Madam Chair. I don't think Senator Bates would be very happy if he knew that Buckley had been elevated to senator. So,
dang it. Thank
Let's
you,
just
sir.
Call him representative. Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right. That's a fair point.
We'll keep that between us since Representative Buckley's not here.
My apologies. Thank you.
Welcome.
Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Legislative Counsel. I was asked to come down and briefly talk about the amendments as well as identify a couple of things that might change for the official versions that come out, or things that our office at least has identified. The Dash 2 amendments deal with testing. The Dash 3 amendments deal with labeling. And what our office did is the idea behind the amendments is that we will have universal testing and labeling laws that apply to both 91 and medical.
Mark, obviously, can you back off a little bit from the
sorry.
Mic? There you go.
Obviously, there needs to be flexibility for handling the two products differently, and we've written that into the law. But the idea is that there will be a single driver behind the testing and a single driver behind the labeling of the products to allow as much uniformity as possible. The Dash 2s, a lot of these are basically boilerplate language that allows for governance. And I want the committee to understand that, and I'll point out maybe the provisions that need to be looked at more closely for substantive change versus the stuff that we've incorporated for governance that would allow for the regulation of the products by the agencies. So the testing component, we have incorporated some definitions. The one thing I did want to point out is that it's important to draw a distinction between extracts in both medical and 91 that are dangerous to make versus ones that aren't dangerous to make, because those statutes deal not only with products that are going to the end consumer, but what a person may be able to do at home. These amendments only deal with products that are being produced in mass quantities for an end user. So we didn't create a distinction between extracts that are dangerous to make and extracts that aren't. It's not as important for these, or that was the feedback that we got. So since these are only mass-produced products that are going to an end user, we just made this definition for extract much simpler in these particular terms. A couple other things that I was asked to comment on were the substantive provisions. And for testing, that's in sections 4, 5, and 6. Section 4 deals with the actual licensure of testing, and in this particular draft, the Liquor Control Commission is going to be in charge of the licensing. We did point out that to be qualified to be licensed, a person must be accredited as specified in section 5 of this amendment. And I'll get into accreditation in a minute. A lot of the other language for licensing is fairly general. Processes for applying for and renewing, fees for applying for, renewing, or receiving, pretty general provisions that we include in a lot of our laws. Section 5 sets forth more specifically the accreditation that a testing laboratory must receive in order to be licensed. And that's going to be that will be handled by Oregon Health Authority under the ORLAB statutes. Those are ORS 438605 to 438620. It was specifically asked that the application process would be online, but there would be on-site inspection powers for accreditation. There has been some language included that was in our notes that is not actually necessary, from my understanding, related to IOS, International Organization for Standardization, and NELAC, National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Conference. That language spans both page 3 and 4. Those are actually part of ORLAB's current requirements, so that might disappear given that it's already currently required. So accreditation would be handled under 3, and then finally, specific rules related to these products and how they have to be tested. A lot of this language has been looked at and has been it's been approved by various parties. The one thing I do want to draw your attention to, though, is paragraphs B, C, and D on page 4. These are the paragraphs that deal with the analytes, and we're still working with the various stakeholders and other parties involved on how to get that analyte language correctly. In other words, what is to be tested and what products need to be tested for those different analytes, whether they're residual solvents, potency, pesticides, et cetera. So we're still working on that, and so that analyte language on lines 20 to 28 is something that we might be working with further. And then throughout the rest of the draft, we've tried to incorporate language to balance both the cost of these procedures as well as the need to protect the public health and safety. We have included language that would allow for enforcement. I do want to mention real quickly that for the lab piece, we also need to include, and this was identified by our office quickly after we procured the amendment, it'll go into the next version, that we do need to include the criminal exemption language We'll probably take the language from the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act. That needs to be included, and so that will be in the next version of this draft as well, for licensed laboratories. So criminal exemption language needs to be included as well.
Would you say what that is, criminal exemption
language? To allow, without being to be criminally exempt from state prosecution for possession, possession and delivery of marijuana, obviously not manufacture here, but for the other two, the laboratories need that criminal exemption language to protect them from state law.
Okay.
So the Dash 3 amendments are specifically about labeling, and again, the same thing I said about the extract definition applies here. And
Mark,
again,
Mark, why don't we hold off on labeling and see if there's any questions
okay.
on the testing part before we move on. Any questions from the committee? Senator Farrell? Okay. All right, proceed.
Okay. The Dash 3 amendments specifically handle labeling. And again, a lot of the language is boilerplate in order just to create a mechanism by which labeling can be controlled, and different licensees or registrants, they can be held accountable for whether or not something is labeled accordingly. What we did do in this particular draft is the substantive provisions are in Section 4, which is on page 2, 3, and 4. And what we did do with this draft is we looked specifically at the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, and we looked at the labeling and packaging components that were written into that act, and we kind of built on those. And so you'll see that the labeling and packaging that's required here is very similar to what's required for dispensaries currently. Child-resistant safety packaging, that will be a packaging requirement. Cannot be marketed in a manner that is untruthful or misleading. May not be packaged in a manner that's attractive to minors. Cannot be marketed in a manner that's attractive to minors. There is some language that needs to be worked out in paragraph E on page 3 about what exactly we're going to put on the label with regard to tetrahydrocannabinol and cannabidiol by weight. And we're getting feedback on that language right now. And then finally, paragraph F, if it is a food product, then it should be labeled as other food products are currently labeled. So that is all on page 3. The remainder of the draft, again, we did write in there, again, the balance between evaluating cost and public health and safety and adopting rules. And a lot of the other language is primarily boilerplate. I mean, there's obviously substantive provisions in that boilerplate, but a lot of it's boilerplate in order to make sure that the agencies, both agencies, have the power to regulate labeling. So,
that's it. Okay, questions.
If you have questions, I'm sure.
Representative Olson.
Thank you. So. Mark or Representative Leininger, any consideration of the topical products that we'd heard testimony on, you know, several weeks back, how that plugs into this or does it?
So, Representative Chair Burdick, Representative Olson, currently what we've done in these particular drafts is we have defined marijuana product to include any other product into which cannabinoids or leaves and flowers have been incorporated, which would allow for regulation of topicals, although it's not called out specifically. But it is not an edible or an extract underneath this definition, but there is the allowance for regulation underneath both of these amendments for topicals. There is some language out there about creating a definition for topicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I still need to wait on some kind of direction for how that needs to be handled with these. So.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Farrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Several witnesses testified that their medical product is such a unique formulation, there might only be one or two users. As a matter of fact, some of the medical products, as I understand it, are unique to the individual. May have no THC or little or in high. Am I getting this right? CDB.
CBD.
CBD.
CBDEDBDI.
That's the one.
That's CBD. Thank you very much. And in that instance, Is there any mechanism for a waiver to the labeling requirements when the formulation is so specific? It's for one person.
Underneath, Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, underneath this draft, there is not. There could be different ways of approaching that problem, though, from a drafting perspective. And we could write a simple direction that allows them to adopt exceptions by rule and then put some parameters on when they are allowed to adopt exceptions. That would be a way of handling that.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, just a follow-up. Is it the Oregon Department of – is it the USDA – is it the Department of Agriculture that currently administers food labeling?
Senator Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, correct. That is currently the primary agency that is in control of food labeling. I know that our own Department of Ag connects, they adopt rules that connect to those federal rules in order to impose labeling requirements in state, but it is connected to the United States Department.
Okay. Madam Chair, there have been a couple of folks that have developed local jellies and farm produce products. They've had a hellishly complicated process for getting their labeling approved. They've been required to do all the testing, of course, and provide all the test results through a process with USDA. And sometimes it takes eons, it seems, to get that label approved, so that they can go ahead and sell these products for human consumption. And then, of course, once they get their recipe approved and the label approved, there's no deviation allowed in that production, because what's in the product is on the label, and what's on the label is in the product. So in the edibles for, you know, and I guess you could use cookies or brownies or, you know, any of the other kind of products that are going to be out there, are we expecting people to go through that labeling process before the infusion? Let me back up. Are we expecting people to go through that labeling process for the food grade type products?
Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, I don't know what the expectation would be at which point they approach that particular part of the process as these are written. The way that particular provision is written here is it just requires the labeling content to be the same as if it was another food product.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So okay. It seems to me that the adoption of rule might be, you know, adopting rules to handle labeling might be able to handle that particular aspect of it.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, then are the products in their production to be tested infused or uninfused? And is the infusion going to be part of the labeling process? I mean, I guess I assumed if you're going to look at a package of cookie, you'd have all the normal disclaimers and disclosures, plus the vitamin content,
caloric content.
And also there would be a label on the THC content.
Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, I do think that was the intent behind the request was to, for edible products, would be to get both the normal food content on there, so you would know what the caloric content would be in the ingredients, things like that, as well as pertinent labeling requirements addressing just the THC and CBD content. And we're still working on that part of it. We're receiving some feedback on the best way to put that into the amendment.
And Madam Chair, I'd be interested in hearing from some producers of products their stories about how they got their labeling approved, and they must be offering these products in other states where it's legal. So I'd just like to hear. I don't want to go reinventing the wheel. I don't want to make this hellishly complicated. And I would urge anybody that's going to do an edible product to get started on the non-infused process, so that they will be as far down the road with that labeling process as they can possibly be before they need the license to do it.
Chair Burdick and Senator Farioli, you know, I'll tell you that we were really trying to make sure that things are safe. So we were brainstorming what kinds of scenarios could arise. And we thought, you know, what if at some point, you know, there's infused lasagna or something. There's some product that is a food. Now, you want the marijuana, the cannabis that goes into it to be safe. But gosh darn it, if, you know, you also have lasagna in that lasagna, you also want that to be safe and not tainted or going to make someone sick. And so what we're trying to go for is, without unduly burdening people, coming up with a scenario so that the cannabis part of it is pure and not unsafe, but so that the rest of it similarly is fit for consumption. So we're trying to strike that balance, and we welcome input. But this is a first step for people to respond to.
And Madam Chair, in discussions between the chairman and the co-vice chairman, we've decided two products should be banned: infused wine and infused pizza. Two lives at least will be saved.
But what will we bring to our end of session party? That's the question.
All right. Thank you. So are there other questions from the committee? Thank you so much. You've really worked hard on this, and I think you've gotten a really good product in front of us. So I want to thank you both for your work and the other members of the committee, including Senator Buckley.
Yeah.
Senator.
You were promoted while you
he
were
gone. He did such a good job that we decided.
Or demoted, as the case may be. All right. Thank you so much. And now I will turn the gavel back to you, and you can start with the witnesses.
Give me some
Let her do it. She's got it.
Co-chair, while we're sitting here, we're wondering if we could just put down as this part about the food processing, if we could find out what's happened in Colorado and Washington State, because both of them have product.
Right. Good.
This is a full meeting for me here. So the next thing that we have on deck is we're going to start by inviting Mowgli Holmes to come forward and offer some insights. He's been giving a lot of really good feedback in our process of trying to get to reasonable regulations, and he has some suggestions. And then we have a list of people we'll work through. Before you start, Mr. Holmes, I want to note that we're going to be addressing the land use amendment, the -5 amendment also. And so if we call your name and you wanted to speak only to that, let us know, and we can hold off on calling you up, or perhaps we can even bump forward with the land use information so people have a well-organized opportunity. So thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, Chair Leininger, members of the committee. My name is Mowgli Holmes. I'm the Chief Scientific Officer of Phylos Bioscience and a member of the board of the Cannabis Safety Institute. So the Cannabis Safety Institute is a group of PhD scientists who are involved in the cannabis industry. And I think it's fair to say that we all watched with alarm as Washington and Colorado rolled out their programs and decided that there would be safety testing of cannabis, but didn't have a plan for how to regulate the labs that would do that and didn't know what the labs should test for. And both of those states picked random lists of things to test for from different sources, and the lists were totally different. And they both at first did not regulate their labs and then decided to invent a regulatory process from scratch that also didn't work very well. So we were worried that maybe that's how it would go. And I just want to say that we're all really surprised and pleased that Oregon seems really, and all of you members of the committee, everybody seems really dedicated to making Oregon do things correctly. And actually all that had to be done that could have been done in those other states is just the decision to use a known accrediting body that holds labs in the normal world to high standards. And everyone seems dedicated to having ORLAP do that here. And the decision to have some scientific input into how you do testing and what you test for. So Representative Leiniger and Senator Cruz worked on an informal testing work group and got a lot of feedback together about how to do testing. The Dash 2 amendments here are a good reflection of that. As the Legislative Council said, they'd need a little bit of work, but very little. And I think the appropriate amount of detail has been left for the Rules Advisory Committee to specify. And I just feel like everything is good with the testing. I feel like we nailed it. And I want to thank all of you for being so open-minded to the scientific part. The one thing that I think is outstanding that we're not sure about is that the Rules Advisory Committee has subcommittees. The Rules Advisory Committee for the OLCC is meant to have subcommittees, and one of those is meant to be a subcommittee that will determine the rules in detail for testing. Now, the laboratory accreditation process, I think we're in agreement, should be pulled off and given to the OHA through ORLAP. I think a lot of us also feel that the entire testing piece, the Rules Advisory Committee that makes all the testing rules, should also be under the OHA, so that all of the scientific stuff, the stuff that has to do with the laboratories, is under a scientific organization that can respond appropriately to new science, and that can maybe even be a home for doing some of those small experiments that need to be done to figure out how to make sure that everything is done safely. And that's all. Thank you all again.
Do you have any questions in response to that?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Chair.
Mr. Holmes mentioned it, but I wanted to give special recognition to our Senate ambassador to this work group, Senator Cruz, whose public health background really added a lot to this discussion. So I just wanted to recognize him. Thank you, Senator Cruz.
Thank you.
Thank you. So next up, I'll call up three individuals. A couple people have indicated that they also want to testify on the land use bill, so I'm hoping that folks who want to also testify on land use will hold those comments until a bit later. But let's start with Don Morse, Nikki Terzieff, and Sam Chapman. And then on deck, we have Rob Bovet, Jennifer Valley, and Aaron Purchase.
Someone can have Sam Chapman's spot. I'm just dash five.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you.
I want a little good behavior.
Yeah, what a good citizen. Thank you. All right. So that brings us to Rob Bovet, who is also dash five, but is a little dash two, as far as I can tell. A little bit country and a little bit rock and roll. All right. You may start in whatever order. Please begin by stating your name.
Thank you. Nikki Terzieff here on behalf of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. Just by way of brief introduction, we are a statewide trade association that represents the industry from what I would say is farm to home and all of the stops in between. And that said, I will be talking a little bit about the Dash 2s and a little bit about the Dash 3s, some country, some rock and roll.
Nice.
Unfortunately, our lab representative, Rashawn Reardon, couldn't be with us tonight, but she did submit written testimony. It's on OLIS. It should be there for your review. I'll just touch on some of the brief things that she wanted to indicate. First, I would say, first and foremost, thank you to this committee for entertaining those Dash 2s and producing what you've produced. Independent third-party testing is going to be really the heart of making sure that this industry starts to work. The labs, in our view, is kind of where it all starts. And again, NELAC, ISO, ORLAP, all of those will give accountability and flexibility. We appreciate the ability to have the rulemaking process, whether it be at OHA or at OLCC. I think we're agnostic as to the location or the home, but the underlying rulemaking and the details of those rules is really going to be the mission critical for us. We want to make sure that we have cost containment. Don't want to force folks into the black market by having these tests either be duplicitous or extra expensive and therefore forcing folks out of the system. And then finally, Don, I think we'll talk a little bit more to this after I'm done with my Dash 3 piece here. But finally, we want to talk about chain of custody and batch certification. So if the labs are the starting point, this is the place that we can initiate the full chain of custody and assure that when the cannabis arrives at the dispensary or even better at the patient's home or at the adult recreational user's home, that it's going to be it's going to be responsible to public safety, public health, and also be cost-effective all the way along the way so that we're not passing on any of those costs. So that's a little bit from Rashawn on Dash 2. I do encourage you all to please read her written testimony on OLIS. To the Dash 3, again, OCBC, we're very sensitive to public concerns of safety, of health. In this regard, on the Dash 3s, I want to make sure that we're addressing the question of edibles. And I believe that we've seen some movement and some forward motion on conversation around edibles, the packaging, the processing, and the ultimate sales in the rec market, which is a great move. We don't want to have kind of an orphan sector within the overall industry. So packaging, addressing it to make sure that children are safe or not attracted to the product, you know, we can address that. We don't do bright colors. We won't have cartoon characters on the pack, if you will. But there is some level of personal responsibility that we want to make sure folks feel at home. And when you're at home and you are in possession of these materials, it is going to be somewhat incumbent upon the adult to ensure that it's out of the child's reach. Now, from that point to this, from this point to that, you would be able to have, of course, the tamper-proof pack. We would encourage opaque containers, not fun, fancy colors. And we unfortunately have seen a few members of ours at OCBC whose products have been yanked off the shelves. Varying investigators have wandered into dispensaries and had varying standards. So it's just an underscore the importance of making sure we're having this conversation, giving again the OLCC the ability to set these rules and set these standards, broad specification and statute about what they should address, the packaging, the labeling. That's fine. But when we get down to the details and the nitty-gritty, we want to be able to encourage the OLCC, and in some case to work with the OHA, because the OHA, in part through OCBC, has now started to refine what they're looking for so that we don't have packages that are being taken off the shelves, and we can have some uniformity in what we can expect. Thank you.
Good input. Thank you.
Senator Burdick, Representative Langinger, members of the committee. My name is Donald Morris. I'm chairman of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council and owner of the Human Collective Dispensary. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. The need to create a level and reliable system of testing all marijuana products is of utmost importance to our industry. The requirements as put forth in the Dash 2 amendments are a critical first step. It is important that the legislation be broad enough to empower the upcoming Rules Advisory Committee to do its job, since they will have far more knowledge on the subject. We would caution against attempts to change the amendment by inserting language that would further define testing requirements, such as where and when and how marijuana needs to be tested, as it may have unintended consequences resulting in high costs that will be passed on to the consumer. We feel strongly that the types of test and the sequence of testing should be left up to the industry experts assigned to educate the RAC and craft recommendations. On page 4 of the Dash 2 amendments, section 6, 1A, it gives the OLCC, OHA, and the Department of Agriculture authority to adopt minimum standards for testing. Item A says they shall establish procedures for tracking usable marijuana to be tested. That is the only mention of tracking in the amendment or in 844 in its current form. Without a clear system of tracking tested marijuana, there can be no assurance to vendors upstream of what they will be getting. Not many would, but one bad apple could replace inferior and untested marijuana for what was tested. OCBC members are also concerned that a system without continuity and tracking will lead to more marijuana finding its way to the black market, most of it over state lines. In individual meetings, you have each heard from OCBC regarding a bag and tag system, which would allow the state to track all the marijuana in the system and where it goes. I submitted a familiar-looking detailed diagram that defines a clear chain of custody from farm to home. A complete system needs to be created, and we would recommend that it begin at the testing labs because they are the one common denominator in the entire industry. Labs can do the bagging in the field and take representative testing samples back for testing. Some of the state's most successful labs already do this. Smaller growers can take their marijuana to a lab where certified samples can be taken and then leave with their bags of marijuana to await the testing results. Either way, each state-sanctioned tamper-proof bag could have a barcode that would be scanned into the state's tracking system and stay there until a business scans it into their inventory. This is a fairly standard approach in other industries such as shipping with FedEx or UPS. You can see each stop along the way if you've ever tracked your packages online. Benefits to this system would be if a crop failed, the state would be alerted of the bad product and they could confiscate it for destruction. Failure to produce the untampered bags could lead to fines or loss of license. Law enforcement will have greater clarity on the legality of the marijuana they may come across. Processors accepting bagged product from a grower can rest assured about what they will turn into concentrates. Dispensaries will receive products either directly from a grower, a distributor, or a processor, and know that it's fit to go on the shelves. Most of the labs in the state are already doing bag and tag on request. Oregon Cannabis Business Council urges you to make certain that the chain of custody using labs to bag and tag be made part of SB 844. Industry actors can rely on it, and most importantly, our patients and eventual retail customers deserve it. Thank you for your time, and I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovette, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. As some of you know, we have a number of vetting committees that look at various amendments and rules. We have a law enforcement vetting committee that looks at all of these things, and they caught something this afternoon that I hadn't caught. So very briefly on the dash twos, in Section 8, subsection 2, the dash twos direct local law enforcement and state law enforcement to assist the commission by enforcing what's in the dash twos, and then reporting that to the district attorney, investigating and reporting to the DA. The thing is that violation of the dash twos is just a civil thing. It's a civil penalty. And so we don't know what the purpose of subsection two is. It just seems to waste a lot of time, DA, filing things with the DA that they can't do anything with. So we just suggest you just delete subsection two, as it seems to not do anything. And then I have quite a number of comments about the dash fives, but do you want me to just hold those or and call me back? Or
yeah,
or do you want me to touch it real quickly? Whatever.
You know, if you don't mind, I think it would be helpful if we could have Mark and Ken, Representative Helm, describe
first
that work and then hear those comments. I hope you don't mind.
Got it.
Thanks. Any questions for this panel? Senator Fraley.
A veteran of the Revenue Committee, any veteran of the Revenue Committee will recap their experience in listening to people counterfeit cigarette decal tax stamps. And, you know, anybody that's been in the Judiciary Committee can talk about changed VIN numbers. So, you know, did anybody discuss the security of the tag and bag system, RFID chips, or anything more sophisticated than a paper label?
No. We've just been trying to get the message out that we need to track this after it's been tested. If the product just goes back to the growers, we have no idea what ultimately we're going to receive upstream. The details about how to do that have been limited to a bag and tag with barcodes, nothing more than that.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, all three of you, for your input. We sure appreciate it. And next up, we have, I'm realizing we have a fair number of people, and we'll need some people up twice to speak also to the dash five. So if we could keep our comments under 3 minutes, that'd be great. We have Jennifer Valley, Aaron Purchase, and Bethany Shoreman. And then next up after that is Jeremy Scarrett, Anthony Taylor, and Patsy Myers. You may begin in any order. Please state your name for the record.
Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, Co-Vice Chairs and committee members, thank you for offering the public an opportunity to speak on the SB 844 amendments today. For the record, my name is Bethany Sherman. I am the principal owner, founder, and CEO of OG Analytical, a cannabis quality assurance laboratory based in Eugene, Oregon. OG Analytical is well known in the industry for having the highest quality standards for consumer safety testing in Oregon, and this stems from our personnel's strong background in regulatory compliance testing for the DOA and for nutraceutical companies that fall under FDA rules. I'm also a co-founder and director of the Cannabis Safety Institute, a not-for-profit board of scientists and regulatory experts, including Dr. Magley Holmes. Which is committed to providing the rigorous scientific data and expertise necessary to ensure the safety of the legal cannabis industry. I'm here today to express my support for Amendment -2 of SB 844. It's really refreshing to see the commission working with scientific advisors to implement sensible regulation for cannabis testing. I want to thank you and the authors of this draft for the work you've done thus far on testing, including this amendment. I specifically want to express support for Section 5.2D laboratory accreditation to the NELAC standard. The NELAC standard is a much more rigorous standard than ISO, which is referenced in 5.2C, and both of those with ORLAP will ensure the competency of any lab operating within the cannabis community. I'm really glad that the draft elects ORLAP as the accrediting and auditing body for the NELAC standard. Since ORLAP is an OHA program in support of public health and cannabis testing is a public health issue, I want to encourage the commission to leave the development of the testing rules to the OHA, as Dr. Holmes mentioned previously, rather than the OLCC as referenced in Section 6.1. I commend the authors of the draft also for including the DOA in this section, as well as they are the most qualified authority for assisting in the definition of analyte lists, specifically pesticides, which will be an important topic in the rulemaking process. Cannabis testing is a sensitive and critical issue, and you're all doing such a great job with it. With the proposed Amendment -2 of SB 844, I think you can just about cross this one off your list. Thank you.
I just almost want to give you extra time.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Who would like to go next?
Good evening, Madam Chairs, members of the Commission. My name is Jennifer Valley. I'm from Happy Valley, Oregon, and most of my work is with patients. A few years ago, I had my uncle come to my garden, and I asked him if he could explain to me why my Oregon Pinot Noir makes back pain go away and why my pit bull makes migraines go away and why the other ones make cancer go away. And he said that he could tell me those things for a tenth of a penny and in a thousandth of a second, because as the head of the botany department at the University of Wisconsin and also the top USDA tomato, potato, and carrot man, he has the equipment to have those answers available to him and the expertise and know-how to do it. But if he so much as touched one of my cannabis plants, all of his credentials would melt, and so he can't do that. My big issue is that I can send 10 samples of my oil to 10 different labs and get 10 wildly different results, which means I can't get anywhere in my research because I can't get any solid information from anywhere. I need access to university labs, university doctors who know how to run their labs, who can give me the answers that I want. And as much as I'm very interested in launching a thriving new industry, without standards, where you end up depends on where you start, and none of us are starting from the same spot. I mean, I would even consider going to the DEA's top cannabinoid specialist for the standards that he has to evaluate cannabis. But I'm not sure how happy folks are with, you know, doing that sort of thing. But they have the standards. Can we make them give them to us? Can we somehow let our universities do this? My frustration, I have no words.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It is a frustrating situation. Thank you.
Ms. Purchase.
Hi, thank you for having me here today. Once again, my name is Erin Purchase, for the record. I represent a lot of patients. I have a lot of friends that own businesses that are in the cannabis industry, and I hear a lot of frustration with the current situation with the labs. Standards are definitely needed. I was a microbiology assistant in a medical laboratory for 3 years. There were standards, and there was a company that came in and inspected us called CAP. They made sure we followed everything. They made sure we calibrated our machines. We had to calibrate them on a daily basis. They made sure that we correctly ordered the right standards to test samples against. I feel that there's probably not this setup in the Oregon medical marijuana program going on right now, because as she said, you can take oil and send it to all the different labs that are available right now, and you're going to receive a different result from every single laboratory. And that's just not okay. My friends feel like they are getting ripped off because they're required by law to test their medical marijuana product, but then the Oregonian can come and retest them and publicly make them look bad, but they paid for that testing. Mm. This is not fair. This isn't fair to the companies. It's not fair to the patients. So I definitely support some real true standards. I don't know what that is, but we need some real testing. Growers don't feel comfortable sending their products to the labs when the labs are coming back saying, oh, I forgot to clean my machine and I need to retest your product. That's really not responsible, and it doesn't make us as growers feel comfortable sending our entire crop to you if you can't clean your machine on time. It just doesn't work. So I definitely support some good standards. We need to fix that because we're not the top of the line state right now. We really truly aren't. I was a little concerned on Section 12 in the Dash 3 amendments. I don't think the OLCC should be able to repeal any laws set from the OHA. We've worked very hard to preserve patient rights, and I don't necessarily feel like the OLCC is mainly concerned about patient rights. Thank you for having me and listening to my perspective.
Thank you so much. All right. Any questions for this panel? Chair Burdick.
Madam Chair. Ms. Shorman from OG Labs. I wanted you said that you had a tweak that you wanted to make in the amendments, and I was wondering if you'd elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. I think you're referencing, Senator Burdick, I think you're referencing the same thing that Dr. Holmes was speaking to earlier, in that with the accreditation for cannabis laboratories being under ORLAP, and ORLAP being an OHA program for the public health, also ORLAP is part of the public health laboratories, that the testing regulation, or sorry, the rule creation process should be under the OHA instead of the OLCC.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions?
Yes, Representative Sunstein, Senator Buckley.
Thank you. Yeah, sure. By adopting these standards, do you see a price shift in terms of the cost of testing, and any estimate, rough estimate, what that might be?
I absolutely, Representative Buckley, I do see a fairly dramatic cost shift for this. It's the ORLAP standard is very rigorous, and it will require very strict standards to be in place to maintain that, to achieve and maintain that accreditation. And we are currently at an incredibly low price for testing right now for what we're doing for the medical marijuana program. And if we are going to test and do good consumer safety testing and maintain that accreditation, we're looking at, so the current price that most labs are charging is right around $100. Hmm. And we're going to see that need to shift to probably $300.
Thank you, Ma'am Lucci. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Farioli.
So if the overall cost goes up, but the most price conscious or cost conscious folks are those that are benefiting in the medical side of the program, is there some mechanism for maintaining low cost for the medical side? And obviously that does mean a cost shift to the recreational side. Has that been discussed at all?
I think that if we had production licensure and Oregon Health Plan covering medical marijuana products and services, that we could definitely keep costs very low.
Madam Chair, have we discussed having the Oregon Health Program pay for marijuana for patients yet?
That's next session.
I see.
Actually, we discussed it at the Subcommittee on Outcomes 3 years ago, and they agreed that if we had legal dispensaries, that they would start developing billing codes for medical marijuana products and services. So the idea has been floated and accepted.
Okay. Ms. Shorman, did you want to respond to Senator Farrelly's question, too?
Sure. Senator Farrelly, Representative Leininger. The cost of testing, even at $300 per sample, if you spread that out over a large batch size, the cost is actually fairly minimal, especially if you compare it to the cost of quality assurance testing in every other industry. That's the cost of testing for cannabis, even at $300 a sample, is still much lower than the cost of similar quality assurance in other industries. For example, we tried to get a validation for one of our pesticide tests from Pacific Agriculture Labs, which is a very large commercial laboratory that does agricultural testing for the agricultural industry. And the price that they quoted us for one pesticide test with a solution already diluted. Basically, it's a dilute and shoot scenario where they don't have to do any sample preparation. They quoted us $300 for just the pesticide test alone. And that's the standard price that any other business in the agricultural industry pays for this testing. So okay. If you consider the cost that most businesses add to their production line or their production costs, it's actually still fairly nominal, especially if you spread that over a large batch size.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. All right, thank you, panel. Next up we have, and again, with an eye to time, let's try to stay under 3 minutes each. We have Mr. Jeremy Sackett, Anthony Taylor, and Patsy Myers. On deck we have Jessica McKinney, Lee's got the Dash Fives. We have Jess McKinney, Les Helligren, and we have Jeremy Sackett again, which means we have Noreen Arnold instead. Hello, Mr. Sackett.
Good evening. excuse me. Good evening, Madam Chairs and committee members. Thank you for opening this subject for public testimony. I didn't submit any written testimony this evening because it was actually going to be quite short. I had just a few key points. Number one, thank you. This was put together very well.
Pardon me. I hate to interrupt you when you're thanking us, yes. But if you could state your name for the record.
Yes. Jeremy Sackett, co-founder and operations director at Cascadia Labs, operating quality control testing in the regulated cannabis industry in Bend in Portland. Thank you very much for putting together a very well-drafted version of this bill, Amendment Dash 2 for 844. It took a lot of technical areas with a lot of input from different stakeholders to kind of put this together, but I think it's put together very well. Putting the Oregon Health Authority, the Office of Public Health Laboratories, in control of the accreditation process for ensuring the competency and qualifications of the labs. The one, as Mark mentioned, there is a few potential minor editorial changes. I would agree in Section 5, subsections C and D, where they specifically outline the TNI and the ISO standards. I believe that those two sections could be removed in their entirety captured with the language that is in Section 1 that references the ORLAP regulation. Within Section 6, There were some comments about the analytes that were represented in those lists for the different product types. I do believe that a minor modification from mycotoxins to microbial contaminants would be an important consideration. That microbial contaminants would capture both microbial organisms as well as the mycotoxins that they would produce. Overall, Section 6 outlines some important flexibility that defines some specific analytes that need to be addressed for known public health and safety concerns, but allows the flexibility for scientists, both at the state agency level as well as industry subject matter experts, to contribute in the rules process to further define what those very specific quality control attributes should be and what limits should be set. I agree that the Oregon Health Authority should host representatives from the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Environmental Quality, as well as industry subject matter experts to define the testing rules around the specifications, that being what is tested and what the limits are. I do believe that the OLCC, Rules Advisory Committee, is well positioned to outline the requirements for traceability or documentation from seed to sale, as well as to home. So that would separate the rules for scientific-based rule in the Oregon Health Authority, while traceability would remain with OLCC. I do believe that a bag and tag system is a good option, but is not the only option. With the flexibility for both, you know, the scientific limits and analytes to be tested, there's also going to be advances in technology that will allow an interface via computer, RFID chips, that could be supplemental or eventually replace a bag and tag system, or they could work very well together. Thank you very much for your time. I'll hand it over to Patsy and Anthony here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Chairman Liniger and Chairman Burdick and all the committee members. Thank you all for hearing us today. My name is Patsy Myers, and I'm one of the owners and founders of MRX Labs in Portland, Oregon. And having listened to some of the topics that have addressed the labs today in this industry, one thing that is so critical to the success for the state and for this industry is we have to keep the testing cost as low as possible. If we don't do that, we are going to kill this industry before we ever get out the gate. And there are ways to carefully consider what is contributing to those costs and try to lower them, keep them narrowed. One thing is, and I don't know exactly who's going to be making the final decisions, if it's this committee, in addition to rulemakers, in addition to scientists, I actually would like to sit on any, I don't even know what you call it, but I would like to be a part of all that. I would like to ask you and whoever's making the decisions to always be asking the questions. What documentation, what data supports the necessity for this test as far as being critical for safety, health, and well-being? And what is the incidence frequency of something that has ever happened in history? If it's happened once back in the 90s, don't please add that test to the requirements. There will be research and there will be data as we move forward, but there could be an open-ended clause for the rules that there would always be, like test as research and data becomes available that necessitates safety, health, and well-being. Until that day, please, out of fear factors, don't add tests such as heavy metals. Don't add a lot of bacteria tests unless they are already supported by documentation of research and data and incidence frequency. And if they are, then they're necessary. If they're not, then we need to leave that space open going forward for when they're supported by science and by science. Let's see. Another thing, as far as the bagging and tagging, I know the state, it sounds as though it's going to be providing bags, and please keep that cost low, because as Bethany from OG Analytical said, it is going to cost us a lot. It already cost us a lot, and we are only making $100 for a test. And when she says test, that's three tests in one. That's full compliance, which is potency, cannabinoids, pesticides, and then microbial testing. And all of that is expensive on our end. The profit margins currently at $100 are very, very slim. But we want to keep those prices as low as possible. So please help us. Don't add fear factor test, and don't add excessive fees coming from the state. And also, if we raise the prices to where it just is cost prohibitive, we're going to destroy the most important growers, and that's the smaller craftsman growers. They're the ones who are growing on a smaller scale, but they're growing a number of strains that are so critical, especially going forward with research and data in the medical field. Those strains are so important for health benefits.
Thank you.
Are you telling me to stop?
Yep. I'm not actually. I'm not saying those words.
Okay. I've got a lot more to say. Can y'all please either come to our lab, let us give you a tour of the lab, or please include me in these meetings that other people are included in, because...
And may we also invite you to submit in writing any comments that you have on this subject that you didn't get a chance to articulate. And we really appreciate your being here. It's just that we have a bunch of people on this list, so your input is really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Taylor. I represent Compassionate Oregon as well as Canyon 6 Industries, a medible manufacturing company, manufacturing cookies and topicals, actually. I wanted to touch on the Dash 3 amendments. I would like to echo everybody's concerns on testing and also the great work that everybody's been doing. Having done well in school in science and math, I can appreciate all the information that you folks have had to process, and I think that the efforts show good faith, and that we're going to have some testing that's going to work for everyone. On the Dash 3s, on page 2, where it talks about the Oregon Health Authority or the Oregon Liquor Control Commission established minimum standards for labeling, packaging, I'd also include the Oregon Department of Agriculture in there, because they're the ones that really, really are the authorities cited in ORS 616. On page 3, line 13, it says, as determined necessary by the commission, are not processed or packaged in a manner that is attractive to minors. The processed seems a little odd to me, because that means you can't make a cookie. Seems to me like that could be a stretch that could be made and could impact how we manufacture our products. We do fully support lines 23 through 27, ensuring that everything's labeled in accordance with state and federal laws. I would add that, you know, when you're manufacturing a product for consumption by the general public, you are any of your facilities are subject to inspection by Department of Ag, the Health Department, and the FDA, and they can come in unannounced. They typically don't, unless there's a red flag. I want to make sure that we include all those. The other part was that on page 4, section 6, line 17, it says the Oregon Health Authority may inspect the premises of a marijuana grow site. I'm not sure that's where we want to go. That's just a brief comment there. And again, then line 27, where it talks about the state police, sheriffs, and other police officers, I'm a little nervous about that and would echo some of the concerns already expressed by committee members about what type of education is going to be needed for that aspect of this. Then on page 5, when it talks about the $5,000 a day for each violation, normally, as explained to me by some major cookie manufacturers, is that if there's a problem, they come in, they do an audit, they say, here's a problem, here's what you need to do to fix it, and then here's a follow-up. And, you know, like if with like with OSHA, you know, you're given a fine right on the spot. If you correct the problem on the spot, the fine is reduced. I think we should, you know, move in that direction.
Mr. Taylor, if you could wrap up, and if you have additional comments, I'd love to meet with you to hear them, or if you could submit them in writing, that would really help us with our editing. But as to the $5,000 a day penalty, I want to note we've heard that input from a couple different people. I think, you know, since our watchword generally is parallel liquor when you can, I think actually it's I heard that that is parallel to liquor, and it's kind of the standard placekeeper that they keep. However, if it's inappropriate, we're very open to making it an appropriate amount. So first stab, and we appreciate that input. Senator Cruz.
Well, on that issue, Madam Chair, there are protocols already in place. For example, on my farm, if I want OSHA to come out and do an inspection, they'll come out, if I request it, they'll come out, inspect, point out the deficiencies, and give me time to do the correction with no fine whatsoever.
Great.
So there are protocols there.
Great.
But I, to Anthony, to your issue, we're trying to keep as few agencies involved as possible, and I would point out that the kitchen I have in my fruit stand where we make pies is inspected by Department of Ag. However, if I put three tables in there, I would become a restaurant, and they would be inspected by the health department. So we can make variations in where the who does the inspections. And I would suggest, Madam Co-Chair, that as sophisticated as these labs or these kitchens are going to be, it might be more appropriate if we keep all of the authority in OHA rather than the Department of Ag.
That's really helpful, especially given your expertise in the arena. So thank you. Okay, any other comments for this panel? Questions for this panel?
Madam Co-Chair,
yes,
just one final point.
Okay.
I know this is going to touch a nerve with some people, but I know in the cookie manufacturing process, a lot of times these manufacturers pull their own products off the line and test them in-house. And I'm hoping that perhaps we can have a discussion about in-house testing to meet the criteria of labeling specifically and how that might be addressed.
All right. Thank you for raising that. Senator Farioli had a comment.
Madam Chair, thank you. Not just for this panel, but for any folks that are producing edibles, if you could just submit copies of the current labeling that you're using, so we could get an idea of what labels are currently looking like. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Anyone else? You. Appreciate it. All right. So next up we have Jessica McKinney. We have Les Helgerson. And we have Noreen Arnold, please. Then on deck we have Leland Berger. Oh, then we're moving to the Section 5 people. So after Noreen Arnold, we're going to ask Mark Mayer and Representative Helm to give a brief introduction of their land use piece, and then we've got the Dash 5 commenters. Please begin in any order. Start by stating your name, please.
Okay, I'll start.
Thank you.
My name is Jessica McKinney, and thank you, co-chairs and committee, for hearing us today. On labeling, I am a mother, and I have also worked in dispensaries. And I also, in the very beginning, worked in a dispensary that was a dispensary before it was a law to be a dispensary, legal, March 3rd, and afterwards. We're also a very big dispensary, and quite a few manufacturers came to us wondering what the heck to do. We were just a really big central hub, and I'm pretty good at reading laws and rules and interpreting them. I have a science mind and math, and so it was a good fit. They had a need. I could give it to them, interpret it pretty well. So I just, with the labeling, I would just, it's, I like the idea from what I've seen and all the confusion in the people. I really like the idea of a centralized label that goes out to everybody. And I've also been a restaurant manager and food services. And so I'm really excited to hear you, especially Senator Farioli, tell everybody to just get ahead of the curve, because I preached it from the beginning as well. To just get in accordance with food rules and things like that. I really appreciate your guys' leniency in not actually writing those things in, because that could create so much chaos. But I really encourage general public responsibility in doing those things. And so I'm really excited to hear that, and I'm really excited to hear all the public health input, because as a restaurant manager, I really saw a lot of that go to the wayside, having people come into me. I'm sure you've heard some scary stories. I saw some scary things that were just, you know, I refused. So I'm very encouraged by that. Now, as a parent, I would like to touch on someone else, another young lady's comments. I would like to be a responsible parent and teach my kids at home how to stay away from things, and I would like to show them packaging so that things are familiar to them, and I would like to educate them. So I would like to be a responsible citizen and educate my children on that. Now, as far as testing goes in the dispensary, many people have expressed interest in seeing the community come forward and take hold and be a leader in something. Well, we kind of were that in the beginning. All the dispensaries and labs came together to get testing together, and we kind of did the bag and tag thing that everybody's been talking about. And so one thing I wanted to touch on is that the bag and tag thing, someone had asked about like counterfeit labeling and things like that. So the bags, we really put a lot of thought into this. I even worked with Rashawn, I didn't get to work with Jeremy in that discussion, but we all worked together in the end and decided that we were using law enforcement bags, you know, where there's like an end that you can tamper proof, basically, and it's accepted by law enforcement.
And I'm going to ask you to wrap up in the next couple seconds.
Yeah, sure, no problem. But they kind of did that, and it's been accepted, and it kind of works, but you got to track it from the beginning, because like small batches, like edibles and tinctures, they go bad really quickly, and so you don't want those people to make large batches, and you want to make sure that you can, those batches can go to many dispensaries all at once.
Thank
I just want to encourage that.
That's great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right. I am thinking that we have Les Helgerson in the middle there. Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Leininger, members of the committee, Mr. Crawford. I submitted some written comments earlier, so I'll be as brief as I can here, and I'll start with the dash two. But I do want to thank you for your hard work here and the discussions. I've been watching via the satellite internet, and I think you're doing a fantastic job with what is a big job. I'll waive my background in botany and plant pathology and the nursery industry a little bit with dash two. I'm very supportive of what's going on there, and I think it's we're on the right track. A couple of issues, though. First,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Could you please formally identify yourself for the record?
Oh, I'm
my
sorry.
Error. Sorry.
I thought you did that for me. My name is Les.
Yeah,
Helgeson.
I did. I did. Sorry.
Okay.
Senator Buckley's making me ask you. So.
What can I do?
That's it. Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. That is who I am. Helgeson, Norwegian.
If you could just say it. So I don't get in trouble. Just the whole thing.
Les Helgeson.
You're
for
welcome.
The record. Thank you. First, as the Department of Ag has noted in some testimony before the OLCC, there are no pesticides registered for use on cannabis. Okay? And I think growers are entitled to the presumption of innocence. We're not going to use these chemicals that are not approved. Perhaps the Department of Ag, for example, with a nursery license I used to have, they were subject to inspection and so forth. So if there's any suspicion that some nasty stuff's been used, you know, paclobuterol is one that's particularly nasty that I think has been overlooked. It's a growth regulator, not a good thing. But at any rate, there's, if we want to hold back costs, the pesticides, I'm not sure that growers should be held accountable for the pesticide testing. Second, as far as the mold and mildew, I think you've made good progress in stating mycotoxins in this, and that's a step forward rather than just mold and mildew. Because according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control, standards for judging what is an acceptable, tolerable, or normal quantity of mold have not been established. So this is going to be a job for the Rules Advisory Committee and rulemakers generally, and as to identify what level of toxins we want to accept and what do we test for, which mycotoxins. We've identified Aspergillus, but is that the family or the genera of Aspergillus? And not all Aspergillus are toxic. So I'd suggest removing that little piece from the amendment and leave that to the rules-making committee. There are other things, too, that might touch more on the propagators of plant material with diseases and insects we're seeing as well. That's Department of Ag's bailiwick there, I think. But in general, I'm in agreement with what you're attempting to do here.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
I'll testify later on three.
Okay, and if you want to submit your testimony in writing, too, that's also a good way to help us get that.
Yes.
So we can refer to it later.
Thank you. I do.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Arnold, welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Noreen Arnold. Thank you, Representative Linger, and Adam, all of you guys. I wanted to say that I have been trying the last 4 years to follow all of the OMMP rules for making sure that the patients that I supply with any edibles have their tag on it for what was in it, and I always do everything the same, so everything is always consistent. So when you have a cookie, you get what's in that cookie. Now that I have to have them tested, there's a level of testing that you might want to, when I have to test my flours and then test my butter and then test a batch of 24 cookies that I'm making for a patient, that is not cost effective at all for the patient, because it puts $100 test on that cookie when I'm only making 24. So making this into a business has been really, really hard with the rules that keep changing. I have personally had to change packaging 3 times in the last year. Please make a standard that's going to be a standard and not deviate from that unless it's absolutely necessary, not when just somebody decides that they need something else. Mm-hmm. You know, and I went out and got my food handler's certificate before I started doing that for everybody so that I was certified with the rules. So it's not that hard to learn what the rules are.
Okay. Thank you. That's a fair point. Thank you. Senator Przanski.
Madam Co-Chair, if a person is actually, processor is actually making something for their patients, it's not going into what we would call either retail sale or into the medical dispensary for sale, there would be no testing, correct?
I have been testing all of mine because I had some in a dispensary, only one dispensary to get. I tried working with quite a few, but many of them are greedy and rip-offs, et cetera, et cetera. So I've got it down to one. But I've had to change my packaging 3 times for them over the last year. And everything has been tested. And
But the question, I guess, is just a general one. If it's not going into a dispensary for resale or into a retail outlet, there would be no testing, correct?
You know, my understanding, thank you for the question. My understanding is that home grows, there's a specific section that exempts home grows and home production from the testing requirements.
That's correct. That's
I may be mistaken.
But if you're giving it to other patients, you have to have it tested, is what my understanding has been and what I've been complying with.
So that
everything that I've given to any of my patients is tested.
It sounds like you're very conscientious, and this is an ambiguous area, so I don't want to sort of definitively speak to what the intention is, but I think your comment is a very important one that we need to be aware of, not overburdening conscientious good producers, even as we try to maintain safety. So thank you. Any other comments? Okay, thank you so much, panel of three. Now we are ready to transition to our land use conversation, and if we have our legislative council here to accompany Representative Helm, we'll be ready to go. If not, Representative Helm, very good.
Hi.
Wonderful. And yeah, we have one of our wonderful legislative council.
We have now both.
Thank you. All right, so at this point, we'll transition to the Dash 5 amendments. And before we start, you know, I want to thank a couple of people. Representative Helm, who is a land use attorney by training, has done tremendous leadership in this arena. And Representative Buckley has done tremendous work on this, too, with his team. Some other people who've been part of an advisory group, and this is a non-exclusive list, but Representative Wilson has provided some really great insights. Senator Beyer has been a really helpful ally and advisor. Rob Bovet, Steve McCoy, Richard Whitman, Jim Johnson of ODA, and probably some other folks I'm accidentally leaving out have all contributed good ideas. So thank you to everyone. And primarily, thank you to Representative Helm and the legislative team for the legal team for your great insights. Take it away, Representative Helm.
Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee, Ken Helm, District 34. Mm-hmm. Representative Leininger stole about half my speech, so this is going to be short. The Dash 5 amendments have to do primarily with land use recommendations that affect both where dispensaries might be located and how we might regulate the growing of marijuana on EFU lands, exclusive farm use lands. And I think I'll let our legislative council folks do the details on that. The premise we followed was to be very conservative along the lines of trying to adhere to the will of the voters. And as we understood it, the will of the voters said, we want this ability in our counties, in our cities, in our towns. Measure 91 appeared to preempt local law at all levels that were inconsistent with Measure 91. And so we went from that premise. So I think you're going to hear both some pro and some con testimony today. I think the cities and counties might be a little unhappy with what we provided here, and that's okay. These are tricky and robust policy issues that we have to discuss, and I think it's a great conversation for our committee to have in public. So that was where we started from. Along those lines, I think we've heard more than once the counties in particular be concerned that we might be forcing local governments to allow a use in their jurisdiction that is still illegal under federal law. And these amendments do not address that. These amendments assume that we can do what the voters said we could do. So my recommendation to the committee, however, is that we ask for an LC opinion that opines on that question. And we have a very nice memorandum from Rob Bovet that we can provide legislative counsel, I think it would be a prudent step for us to go ahead and see what else he thinks about that. Here's here, however, is what these amendments do not do. They don't address the growing of marijuana under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program on farmland. So when we get done with this discussion, we may find that we need to make harmonizing amendments back into that side of our conversation under the bills that we've been considering there. Secondly, these amendments do not address how we either allow dispensaries or the growing or processing of marijuana or marijuana products on rural residential lands. It's just a fact of the matter that rural residential lands in this state are where almost every use is allowed in some way, and conditioned in a manner typically that attempts to make those uses cohabitate with next door neighbors. Every county has a different way of doing that. And my initial reaction was to let them keep doing it in the way that they do it. We may hear different messages on that asking us to step in, and I think based on what we think about those comments, if we get them, we can make that decision. Finally, these amendments don't address how folks can consume marijuana in any form in private open spaces, either in HOA common areas or in condominium open areas. And there's a lot of concern out there for folks that live in those situations and how to do that. So I think we can't lose sight of that, and I think we need to again try to harmonize that question with how we treat consuming marijuana in public places as it's described in Measure 91. So there's some work left to be done, and I'll answer any questions as they pop up.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Whichever of the two councils should go next is your call.
Co-chairs Burdick and Leninger, Mark Mayer, LC. Jessica Santiago, our staff attorney, actually drafted these amendments. I'll let her address the particulars of the amendments. I do want to say that we do have a committee request in already for the issue that Representative Helm mentioned just a moment ago. So we're working on that, but it might take some time. It's an incredibly complicated issue, and I would like to allow some of the stuff that's on my desk to clear out before I finalize that opinion, if that's all right. It will be done before the end of session.
That'd be good.
Right, or maybe July 10th. You guys know the answer, July 10th. So I would be happy to field questions with that to the extent that I can. But for the particulars of the amendment, I'll turn it over to Ms. Santiago. I don't know if any of you have worked with her directly or not, but she is the drafter of these particular amendments. So she's done a very good job for us filling in for Harrison as well, as he's left the office, and she's taken a lot of slack on the land use stuff. So go ahead.
Thank you so much. Welcome. Thank you for all your great work, Ms. Santiago.
Thank you. So, co-chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee, my name, for the record, is Jessica Santiago, staff attorney with Legislative Council. So I think I'll just start by giving kind of a snapshot, which is going to basically piggyback on Representative Helm said, with respect to these amendments that deal with the land use perspective. So I'll just kind of go section by section and give you a brief summary of what the amendments intend to do. So basically, the purpose of these amendments, the Dash 5, were to bring the local government authority to administer time, place, and manner restrictions or regulations, to bring those in line with local government comprehensive land use plans. Then in Section 3, the amendments also require that the local governments issue a land use compatibility statement prior to any license issuance by the OLCC. Also in Section 3, it requires that any local government comprehensive land use plan that currently doesn't speak to any of the marijuana
permissibility that's been allowed through Measure 91, those need to be amended to allow marijuana producers, processors, wholesalers, or retailers to obtain either permitted or conditional use in at least one designated zoning area. And then finally, in Section 3, marijuana is also going to be considered a crop for the purposes of farm use. And so that speaks to some of what Representative Helm introduced, that we were going to be dealing with the exclusive farm use zoning issues here. That's just kind of a snapshot. So if you have more specific questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thanks very much. So we have some questions. Representative Buckley, would you like to begin?
Well, I think we have a bunch of questions. I'd love to start. Thank you for your work on this. A couple of questions come up, one on nuisance, how nuisance works, and I have a follow-up question on the requirement for local governments to amend their existing comprehensive plans. But first, if I could just ask about nuisance, how does nuisance play into time, place, and manner?
So, Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger, Representative Buckley, in Section 2, Section 59, these time, place, and manner restrictions, when it speaks to basically the city and county comprehensive plan zoning ordinances and applicable provisions of public health and safety laws, each of these are all related to nuisance regulations, so they're meant to kind of encompass that.
Great. Thank you. And to follow up on the comprehensive plan issue, could there be a scenario where a local government that does not want marijuana within its limits and doesn't want to wait for the voters to actually vote to make it a dry county, for instance, they could simply refuse to amend their plan or take years to amend their plan and therefore basically disallow the growing and processing of marijuana within their county?
So, Co-Chairs Leininger and Burdick and Representative Buckley again, I might actually have to defer to my land use expert to my right here.
It would take forever.
I can imagine, yes, they might try that angle, but I don't know how that would work if the comprehensive land use plan is, I guess, delayed intentionally.
Co-chairs and Representative Buckley, I think there's a two-step process there. One would be going back to Section 58 of Measure 91. Essentially preempts the whole field. The language there stating that marijuana and what we do with it is a matter of statewide concern is preemptive language. So after that, we are essentially granting authority back to local governments about what they can do with it. I thought, and I can't find it offhand, I thought there was some language in here requiring local governments to allow marijuana dispensaries in at least one zone within there.
It is.
So I think that's the answer to that. I don't think it's understating to say that that's a pretty controversial provision of these amendments that we need to address carefully.
Yeah. Thank you. So let me tell you a couple things. We have questions waiting from Senator Cruz and Senator Beyer. We also have 8 people who've signed up to testify. Since it's clear we won't get all the way through this, the Dash 5s, you know, to move it to a work session tonight, for example, we'll be back to have more conversation. So let's go to these two committee member questions, and then I'd like to encourage us to invite as many of our community members up as possible to testify briefly before we call it a night. Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It appears, it appears to me that Section 1 takes away local authority, and then you get into Section 3, sub 6, it says, unless otherwise prohibited, that they really have to allow. And which is, so it looks to me like they don't necessarily have a choice in this. my one concern with sub 6 there is it's inclusive, which would mean technically that inside a city you're going to have to find a place where they can have a farm. So I think that there may need to be some massaging there.
Okay. That's a fair comment.
Good. Senator Beyer. Unless, did you have an additional response you wanted to provide, or should we just park that, place mark that?
Madam Co-Chair and Senator Cruz, that needs a lot of discussion. But again, the premise was this was a statewide vote. And if we're going to apply it evenly over the state, we have to do something to address exactly what Representative Buckley was getting at. And I think this is a starting point for a conversation. It's not the end point.
Madam Chair, I'm not arguing with that. It's just that the way that Section 6 is stated, they have to have a zone for all those activities.
Right.
Okay.
So good point. We have Senator Beyer, then Representative Wilson want to make a quick comment, and then Senator Farioli, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just looking at the same section, Section 6, and it seems like you could write the language in Section 1 where they would not require amending the comp plans. And I agree with Representative Buckley, it's a forever process to get a comp plan amended. And it's fairly expensive to do it as well. And in a lot of areas, I know mine, in an expedited matter that this legislature passed in 2007, the city of Eugene and Springfield are still working on that expedited change to comp plan. So it seems like you could just preempt it and make it, because you've already done that, started there, and maybe do that rather than requiring a change in plan.
Okay. Thank you. Did you need to respond to that? All right. Representative Wilson, Senator Farioli, and then I'm hoping we can invite some community members up.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. To Representative Helm, when you're feeling better, I'd love to have a private conversation with you about rural residential, since that's the source of most of the trouble in my area. So when you're doing better, we'll talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay,
thank you.
Yes,
sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will just remind folks that one of the first questions we had was that a reconciliation of the dissonance that we heard between advocates of Measure 91 and cities and counties, who really clearly asserted that they believe and I think will defend their right to administer a local land use, you know, by their own lights. And I guess what, you know, this may be a cautionary admonition. 22 counties voted, perhaps even overwhelmingly, against Measure 91. I have to underscore what Senator Beyer said. If folks believe they're required to do a comprehensive plan amendment, it will be well into 2050 before comprehensive plan amendments are adopted by people who don't agree. You know, so I guess what I would suggest is that not fighting that battle over and over and over again. I mean, we're impaneled to implement Measure 91, but if you want to make a fight, I'm sure somebody will oblige you, you know, legally, and you'll end up wrapped around the LUBA axle just like every other land use initiative ever has been since the passage of Measure 100. So I guess what I would say is the early adopters will be well ahead of the rest of the pack. Most of the people are in the middle, and there's going to be some resistors. And if you spend all of your time and energy on the resistors, you overlook the fact that they age out of the process and die.
And so, I knew that was coming.
So what happens?
Right.
Could it be a little more explicit?
In a metaphorical sense.
Never afraid to say what's true.
It's the same thing with the Tier 1.
Yeah, it is. So I guess the point I'm trying to make here is maybe we go gently forward, not engage in a pitched battle on a jurisdictional-by-jurisdictional basis. Let folks have their prerogatives, and eventually populations of medical marijuana users and veterans and other advocacy groups will convince the jurisdictions that they've maybe made a hasty decision rather than a well-considered reasoned decision. I'm just telling you how not to engage in a 20-year battle over something that if you just sort of go gently there, you end up at the same place.
That's a very wise point.
Yeah.
Senator Beyer, and then I'm gonna try to get to at least a couple community members. Thank you.
Just very quickly, I want to point out to my good friend from Eastern Oregon that it would not be the first time we have superseded local governments in land use. In fact, the code is full of it for farm use exemptions.
Absolutely. And you know what? If you get, Madam Chair, if you get on the wrong side of the Farm Bureau, it'll be for the rest of your life.
Just a thought. I think you're going down the maybe an easier way to get there, where you're defining it as marijuana is falling under the farming program. I forget the name of it. The farming, protected farming regulations.
Right to farm.
Thank you. Right to farm. I wonder if you couldn't do a similar thing with talking about it being that it has to be treated the same as any manufacturing product in any industrial or manufacturing code within a local jurisdiction and or a commercial, treated the same as any commercial use in the case of a dispensary.
Thank you.
You're not changing their codes. You're just saying you have to treat them the same.
You're getting into zoning issues. But
Madam Co-Chair, I'll just wrap up here. I think that Senator Beyer's comment is a good one. I think we do ourselves a favor by treating this new industry like any other business. And the more that we do that, the easier it's going to be. As to Senator Ferrioli's comments, I agree with you, but I think we have a stepwise process to move through. The first step is to have that local ballot election. That was the mechanism set forth in Measure 91. If that is successful and folks say, we want to be a dry town, we're done. If it's unsuccessful, then I think we have to have that more difficult conversation.
Madam Chair, I don't wish to start a colloquy. That's not appropriate here. But in some of the counties, the vote against 91 was 85-15.
And so it should be easy.
If you force the election rather than allow the issue to ripen, you may be, you know, creating an insurmountable barrier for the future. Just a point.
Thank you. All right. Thank you three so much. With an eye on the clock and with great appreciation for people who've come here to give us their views, I'd like to invite Sam Chapman, Rob Bovet, and Lee Berger to come forward. I'd like it if you could each speak for, you know, around 2 minutes. I'm hoping to get a couple more people up here, too. This won't be the last time we discuss it, so it won't be your only time to weigh in, and you're invited to submit written comments, too. I'm going to, Mr. Bovet, if you could go quickly. We love hearing from you, and we welcome additional opportunities to hear from you. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'll take 30 seconds. We've identified at least 13 problems.
Who are you?
For the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties. A number of us, our organizations, including the planning directors, have identified 13 problems with the Dash 5 amendment. Some of them are pants on fire. We can't do this too. This is a great idea, like the Lux. We just need different language. I'll submit written stuff to you. Be done.
Great. Thank you so much for your thoughtful work on it. Mr. Chapman, welcome.
Yes, Madam Co-Chairs, committee members, my name is Sam Chapman, for the record. I've been working with localities across the state for almost over a year now on helping them understand and develop sensible regulations for this industry, and have learned a lot in the process. And those some of these tidbits I wanted to share with you. Section 3, line 22 of this bill says the OLCC shall request a land use compatibility statement from the city or county land use planning commission that authorizes this use. This is obviously a great first step in clarifying the communications between the state and local levels. This is one of the biggest concerns that I have seen in working with these cities is they don't know what's going on. They don't know necessarily what's going on here. They don't know what's already happened, what's in place, what's moving forward. They are simply confused. And so they hold off, or in certain cases, as of recently, they go beyond their legal ability to implement some of these rules. Specifically, I want to talk about the definition of reasonable.
I'm sorry.
and how cities and counties are allowed to enact reasonable time, place, and manner regulations. Now, majority of cities have seen that as what it is, reasonable. Other cities, however, as of recently, and counties, have taken this several steps beyond what I believe, I'm not an attorney for the record, what I believe is out of their jurisdiction. The county, Columbia County, recently has proposed pushing back their moratorium 5 months beyond what the Senate Bill 1531 in 2013 allows them to do. There are other counties, such as Tualatin, I believe it's Tualatin, that are placing regulations on medical marijuana grow operations being a certain amount of feet from other areas of their neighbors. And so we're really starting to see what I think is going to be a very slippery slope in cities coming around and saying, well, we think we have this jurisdiction, and I guess we'll just wait to find out in court. Now, whether or not some of these cities actually want to go to court, I don't think they understand where they're moving at this part in the process. But as the League of Cities and the Association of Counties has said before, it may very well end up there. Right. And so this is something that I think definitely needs to be addressed in legislation. These cities and counties need clear direction as to what reasonable is. A lot of these cities and counties think reasonable means let's put dispensaries and all these commercial licenses in one little area where we've done our homework and we know there's nothing for lease. We know there's nothing for sale. That is not reasonable. And I think that, once again, I think it's great that we open up a better line of communication between the state and city authorities. I'm very cautious in allowing another bump in the road that would allow these cities and counties to essentially stop the process.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony.
Hey, thank you so much. And we look forward to hearing more. It sounds like you have some well-formed ideas, and we have a lot of need for input on this issue. So thanks, Mr. Berger. And then I'm going to invite up, we have three more people. Scott Winkles is not here, right? Gone? All right. So then we have quickly after Mr. Berger, Jessica McKinney, Mr. Helgerson, and Michael Campion as the last three. Mr. Berger.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Leland Berger. I am a lawyer. I've been practicing for 32 years, and I've been representing patients and their providers for the last 20 years. I've been coming to the legislature on this issue since 1999, although it's the first time I've appeared before this committee. I've represented a business in one of the three businesses in Medford who had their business licenses revoked because Medford illegally banned dispensaries. I represented and currently represent the dispensary owner in Representative Buckley's constituent from the city of Phoenix, who's been back and forth with the city there. And I hope that you take this opportunity to correct Section 58 to make sure that it preempts local authority to do the kind of illegal stuff that Sam's describing, to say that things are reasonable when they're not. There's already, in addition to Columbia County, Linn County and Jackson County have banned or are trying to ban cultivation. I think that the notion that anybody is being forced to do anything at the local level is misleading. I think that municipalities are no more being forced to accept medical marijuana than they are forced to accept men kissing who are married to each other. I think that they're no more being forced to do anything that Southerns, and I've told the Medford City Council this, that Southern cities were forced to do when they were forced to have only one drinking fountain instead of two. And I'll tell you, I helped draft Measure 91 along with, I was one of the three lawyers, Dave Kopelak and Paul Loney are the other two. Dave and I both have suggested language to achieve this preemption. Respectfully, Senator Ferrioli, I'm telling you that, and I'm telling this committee that, there's a huge disconnect between what the people want and what their elected officials at the local level want.
Okay.
That's the reason we wrote this into the law. And the last thing I want to tell you, if I could just briefly,
sure.
is it's I guess two last things.
Oops.
I'm sorry. My law business is just me, but I associate with other lawyers. One of the other lawyers I associate with is Ross Day, who's a property rights activist and lawyer. He's submitted written materials. I urge you to look at that. And specifically, it's ridiculous to not allow a home on EFU land if for no other reason than security. It's almost as ridiculous as the OLCC suggesting that dispensary owners can't be armed. And lastly, Senator Farioli, not to pick on you, but the rock goddess, Melissa Etheridge, is planning on marketing infused wine. And I've been approached in my business as a by Oregonian that wants to do that with dandelion wine, and I'm certainly hopeful we'll be able to provide that product to consumers soon.
All right. Well, that was a lot of really good input. Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair,
yes,
Floyd and I have been wondering where Lee was, because we've been dealing with this since 99, haven't we?
Yes, we have. I have had the opportunity to visit with Senator Cruz and Senator Pruszynski and with Representative Buckley. I met briefly with Representative Leininger today. I'm sorry for not meeting up with any of the rest of you, but I had been watching on TV, and although, you know, Rob is a colleague and we've met, the fact is he came to the legislature asking for a ban, left with a moratorium, and went into court in Grants Pass saying that cities were allowed to ban. So I encourage you to not, oh, the last thing is, the federal government, I think that this committee is misunderstanding the Cole Memorandum and its effect on state government. The Cole Memorandum is simply a directive to the United States attorneys for the various states that have medical marijuana. No medical marijuana patient has been prosecuted in Oregon since Chris Olson was the U.S. attorney. And Congress defunded using the Controlled Substances Act in the states that had it. And last week in Los Angeles, when there was a motion to dismiss a criminal case, somebody from the Justice Department said that, we didn't mean it for this, we meant it that we're not going to interfere with the states that are trying to implement the laws. So please, don't legislate from fear. Please preempt the local governments on these issues. And I appreciate your patience with me. Thank you so much.
Hey, we sure appreciate your input. So since it would be hard to follow that, and since it's 7 p.m., and since everyone else, with the exception of Mr. Winkles, has had a chance to speak at least briefly tonight, and Mr. Winkles, we hope you'll come back to give us more input. We're going to call it, we're going to declare victory with this meeting and adjourn until next week. Chair Burdick, would you like to make any comments?
Yes, we will not be meeting on Wednesday, and we hope to have an amendment compiling all of our combined wisdom on the medical marijuana program, and hopefully the lab standards amendment to put is into Senate Bill 844 as an amendment. So we'll see you all then.
Monday is a big meeting. It will be the culmination of a lot of input for your review. And Senator Farioli, please.
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick is too shy to invite all of you to her soiree tomorrow evening in Portland called Marijuana Getting It Right. And where's that to be held, Madam Chair?
You know where it is because you're on the panel. It's in Portland. It's sponsored by the Oregonian. They've been promoting it heavily, and I'm sure I'll see some of you there. We'll see some of
you
there.
Are you serving refreshments?
They'll be serving infused wine. So with that, Quill, thank you for coming. Meeting adjourned.
Good job, Ann.
Quill, thank you for coming. Meeting adjourned.